Welcome to the Exodus Cry Podcast.
All right, welcome to the Exodus Cry Podcast. Today we're in the studio with Helen Taylor, who is our Director of Outreach and Intervention, and we're going to talk about her recent trip to the AVN Porn Convention. And AVN is the adult video news. So AVN is kind of the foremost trade association of the porn industry, and their awards ceremony is basically like the Academy Awards of the porn industry. So it's a pretty big deal. The convention draws in a lot of people from all over the country, I think even internationally. And Helen and her team, they do outreach not only to those who are in prostitution, but also to those who are in the porn industry. And it's definitely an important demographic and people that we feel are important to reach, because our focus, as I'm sure everyone's aware, is the entire sex industry. So that includes porn, prostitution, and stripping. So Helen, tell us a little bit about going to this convention and what you were there to do, and, you know, just start us out and give us the story.
And I'll just preface it by saying it was technically not my personal outreach team here in Kansas City, but I joined a team that had been to this convention before, led by a survivor who runs a anti-trafficking org called Stand for Justice. And so I became friends with this girl, Sarah Jane, and she told me that she was planning to do an outreach at this porn convention in Vegas, and personally invited me to come. It was just a few of us. We were all like leaders in the outreach space. So it was really, I felt very important. It had been on my radar for a couple of years to do outreach in a to women in the porn industry, just that knowing more and more that the sexual exploitation that's taking place within the porn industry with actresses and performers, and that being something that as a whole organization we're really shining the light on. And so having this opportunity, I just knew it was from the Lord. And yeah, it was a really interesting dynamic, I realized, because normally when we go on outreaches, we have the gift bags. If we're on the streets or in the strip clubs, it's quite clear to everyone around us that we're there to reach the women, to encourage the women, to bless the ladies there. But going to this porn convention, we were a little bit more undercover, a little more covert. And I realized that most people there assumed I must be there because I'm really into porn, or I'm a performer myself. Like, several people I chatted to asked me, like, what's your website, or do you have a card? And I realized that they just assume that's the reason you're there. And so I just had to, I had a lot of like mental gymnastics that I don't normally have on outreach. And just, you know, the women would, you know, there was different sections in this whole convention, and so there was some sections where there were the actresses and they had guys lining up to meet them and get a photo of them signed. So it was like a meet or greet area, and that was a prime opportunity to stand in line to meet the women and talk to them. They're expecting to have an interaction, and I could tell, you know, when as a female they were trying to figure out what my angle was, why I was there. And we had these business cards that had a hotline, like a support hotline for women in the industry. And it was there was a survivor of the porn industry on our team as well, and so we were able to just share with them, like, we know that this industry can be really hard and rough on women, and we want you to know there are people here for you that are here as a support. If you ever need anything, need any kind of advocacy or want someone to talk to, here's the card. And as soon as we began to acknowledge we're here to help you, to support you, to be there for you, we're providing a hotline, I could tell some of the barriers just began to come down, and it was suddenly like, oh yeah, you're acknowledging that this industry has a dark side, and I feel like I can be real with you. And some of the girls were like, oh my gosh, there is such a huge need for that in this industry. Like, there really isn't a whole lot of support, or that is so amazing that you are running a hotline. Like, can I have some cards to give to my friends? Like, many of them requested extra cards to give out. So that was a really good thing to be able to connect with them on. Plus, we were giving them out jewelry and art that had been made by some artists. So we were there to just give them gifts, encourage them, connect with them, build friendship, exchange numbers if it kind of got to that place, and offer prayer. Just be there to be the light of Jesus, but in a way that just met them where they were at and really demonstrated to them, you have people that would be advocates for you. We see you, and we want you to know you have someone there for you if you want to ever reach out.
That's great. I think there's a few things that you just said that I want to kind of revisit and talk with you a little bit about. I think the first is just the fact that there's a tremendous amount of exploitation going on in the porn industry. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think people look at prostitution and porn as two completely different worlds. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that porn is just filmed prostitution. And I've even heard from some survivors that were exploited in prostitution and porn, that their time in porn was even a more escalated time of trauma and abuse and all of that. It's just a
plus
heightened...
there's that permanent record of their exploitation,
right,
that they know is forever out there on the internet.
Right.
And it's hot. It's who has seen it? Like, every time you're out and about, that idea that someone might have seen me in porn.
Right. Your traumatic experience being recorded and played and over and over, and not only just played over and over, but by enjoyed by somebody in a sexual way. Someone's getting sexual satisfaction from watching that trauma, and even that in and of itself is traumatic. So
exactly,
there's definitely a heightened level, or I wouldn't want to say one is more traumatic than the other, but I would just say there's definitely a high level of trauma and exploitation going on in the porn industry that a lot of people don't realize. And I think this myth of the empowered, liberated, quote unquote, sex worker is even more so applied to the porn industry, even more than the prostitution industry. I see it all the time. Say, mm-hmm. Oh, well, that, you know, all that exploitation, I can see that in prostitution, but that's not the truth. Porn, those women, they really love what they're doing and they're having their fun and they're enjoying it, blah, 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 on and on. Certainly not the truth. I mean, our team has been investigating and interviewing and connecting with those inside the porn industry for many, many years, and we know that that's not the truth. But I think that, yeah, it's important for people to realize that outreach is important, because those women in the porn industry need support. They mm-hmm. need help. They need to know that people are there for them if they want help to get out, or just need love, just need somebody to talk to. And I think that's the other thing I wanted to point out about what you just said, is that, you know, what you're doing when you're going in there is you're just going to support, love, develop, you know, a relationship. It's not this agenda driven thing where you have this particular goal of something you want to get out of these women, or it's not even, sometimes there's this misconception that if you're a faith-based organization and you're going into these situations that you have this goal of conversions, and that's not what it's all about. Mm-hmm. It's not what it's mm-hmm. about at all, really. It's just about showing them love and support, mm-hmm. and knowing that there's somebody there that could listen to them and just be there for them.
I think, and this is something that my team and I often talk about, like, if you have a hidden agenda, that really does come across, and it's hard to build trust and genuine relationships with people if they feel like you have this hidden religious agenda. Like, the walls will go up, and I don't hide that I'm a Christian if they ask me, and like, if the conversation, if it feels appropriate, I do often offer prayer, because I think that anyone can turn down prayer if they don't feel comfortable with that. The vast majority of women I've ever offered prayer readily just receive it and feel encouraged by it and affirmed by it. And I think that it's really important to go into these places of outreach, specifically with women in the sex industry, to demonstrate the kindness and love of Jesus, to meet them where they're at, to not have a hidden agenda to convert them or to preach at them. Like, it's just kind of really inappropriate in many contexts. Like, I think of at this porn convention, if we had started trying to preach at them in a way that a more traditional, conventional, evangelistic way, we probably would have been asked to leave. And I think sometimes of that idea of being as sly as serpents and innocent as doves, and being like just aware of your environment and having to be savvy, like the knowledge that we're going in with the light of Jesus, his love, and that gets to flow out even if we're not directly saying his name. Like, the Holy Spirit is bigger than that, is brighter than that. One example being, I walked over to a girl and she was like, whoa, I can see this white light around your head. Like, she was just like looking at me like, whoa, like you've got this white light coming out of you. And then when the others came too, and when we offered to pray for her later, she was like, I can still see it, I can feel it. There's like, you guys have a good spirit. Like, I think you're genuine people. And obviously we, you know, it came up that we were believers because we prayed for her in the name of Jesus. But I just think with outreach in general, we shouldn't put God in a box, and we have to be creative, and we have to give the Holy Spirit space to meet people where they're at. Often the agendas that we have towards people we're trying to reach are really quite selfishly motivated, and we have to go in with our only agenda to be to love and to demonstrate compassion and be okay with that. And so I think that was really important. To your earlier point as well about the exploitation in porn, I think that is so key to be aware of and to emphasize, because many of the women there are locked into contracts with their porn producers. And a case recently came out with several porn actresses who talked about being trafficked by their porn producers. They themselves used the language of trafficking, and said for like a, I think it was like for a $7,000 photo shoot, they would end up only getting $400 from that once all the cuts were taken. And so you have to think of it as a big picture, a multi-billion dollar industry that is preying upon young, often vulnerable, sometimes from impoverished areas, women that are wanting to get into the modeling industry, or maybe even the adult modeling industry, because they have this glamorous Playboy idea of what it's like. And the reality is they often end up locked into these five-year contracts where the pimps are the porn producers making money off them, ordering them around. That particular case I just referenced, that I think you even did a blog on, Lila, had the women having to sign up to an escorting agency alongside the porn agency as well. So there is for sure exploitation and coercion taking place in this industry. And, you know, when we're talking about porn, we don't want to only emphasize the effects and harms on the men or women who are addicted, even though that's one part of this conversation. It's actually, this entire industry is completely exploitative to the women who are having to be in it.
Absolutely. And one thing to point out when you're talking about the connection between porn and trafficking, just like we know trafficking is happening in the prostitution industry. But even if a performer says, yes, I consent to A, B, and C, and gets on set, and she is told, well, actually, you're going to have to do this particular act that may be a painful, degrading, violent act that she did not sign up for at all. But then she's under pressure. Everybody's on set. She knows that the other people aren't going to get paid if she pulls out. She's also often threatened that, of course, you know, she's not going to get paid. Maybe she'll never work again if she walks off at this point. And there's a tremendous amount of pressure and coercion that happens even on set, depending on the scene and what's taking place in that scene. So there's all these different levels of coercion that happened in the porn industry, and even that particular situation, forcing, coercing that woman into doing that particular sex act that she did not agree to do to begin with, is an act of trafficking in and of itself. So yes, trafficking is happening at many different levels within the porn industry. And but that's not, I mean, that's not the only thing we're looking at, because the whole, regardless of whether trafficking is taking place within the porn industry, it's the industry itself is, like you said, exploitative, abusive, traumatic.
Exactly.
For what's happening, yeah, to these
A moment these that I had during the convention that made me think about that whole consent aspect was in the BDSM area, where all kinds of different, like 50 Shades of Grey type merch is being sold. And there were all these booths selling leather whips. And as I walked past, I was actually offered a whip and asked if I would like to test it out on this woman. In the corner was a woman whose hands were being tied to a piece of apparatus, and men were lined up to test out these different types of leather whips on her back by hitting her on her back and her backside. And I was so obviously disturbed by this picture and was looking around like everyone's kind of smiling and smirking. Is no one else seeing how deeply disturbing this is? Mm. And I was in that moment, the whole idea of someone consenting to do that, I remember thinking that, like, even if this woman signed up to do that, this doesn't make it right. Like, that we have to take the conversation about this beyond just consent, what someone agrees to or put signs on a piece of paper, and recognize on a really fundamental human level, this should not be promoted as progressive sexuality, where we're literally endorsing beating and lashing women with whips while they're being tied up. Like, the entire BDSM culture that's trying to normalize violence against women through porn is so wrong. And I feel deeply disturbed by the way that our culture is seeking to normalize it, to the point where even women who have died through a violent rape, the man, there was a recent case, was saying, well, it was actually consensual rough sex with BDSM elements, and she just died. Sorry. Like,
That's happened a couple of times recently. And that's exactly, you're saying, the normalization of violence against women under the guise of kink or fetish is deeply disturbing. And exactly right. We've seen this emerge in a problematic way with cases like that, where a woman, I mean, her bones were fractured, her head was beaten and she was bleeding, and when they found her dead, and the man involved said, well, we were just, you know, this was just our kink. We were just doing like a they call it play, you know, like rough sex, and it just went wrong, but she consented to it and she's dead. So is she going to be able to tell us the truth about that situation? No, but he's there, and he's, because of the normalization of violence against women under the guise of kink and BDSM, he wasn't charged with murder. He was charged with, you know, it was an accidental situation instead of an intentional. And, you know, it's because of the normalization of this kind of behavior that we're seeing things like that happen. But yeah, I completely agree. It's just...
And even from, like, so we spoke to a dominatrix as well, and I think that's often an argument that's used of, well, you know, the dominatrix is fully, again, consenting, signing up to do this. She's not being exploited in any way. She's not in prostitution. She has complete power and agency over these interactions. And even if that is one element that isn't quite as bodily traumatizing as full-blown prostitution, I just think you have to step back and think, is this good for her, for him, for society, that we would be encouraging interactions where men are basically paying women to beat them into burgers, or to exert violence against them, or for them to reenact really disturbing things? I remember hearing a dominatrix survivor who'd come out of that saying that this guy asked to be dressed in diapers and scolded, and basically from that entire interaction of what she was being paid to do, she realized that he had been sexually abused as a child, was trying to reenact that, but then pay for it, or he felt in control of that. And so I think that, and for her, there were long-lasting traumatizing scars for her psychologically of all the scenarios that she was forced or even paid to do, because that's not the kind of sexuality that is healthy that we want to be promoting as a society and culture. And so we spoke to this one dominatrix at the convention, and she seemed to be very, you know, confident and like I'm in control. This is what I love to do. Here are my shoes with all these spikes and my whips. And like she was presenting that facade of the empowered sex worker, quote unquote. But after we were talking with her for just a little while, we asked her how she got into this work, this industry. And she opened up sharing that she had, she was a teenage mom, single mom, and started dancing at strip clubs. And as she began to open up, she began like tearing up. And you just begin to like go a little bit further back in their story of how some women ended up in the porn industry. And you realize there's a lot of pain and trauma and dysfunction here. And it isn't the full picture. And I think there's just something really important for people to see, because if they only see the tip of the iceberg without considering what led her there, they're really only seeing a 2D presentation.
Yeah, and we see that a lot with prostitution as well. We recently made a video, a 2-minute animated video about the concept of choice when it comes to prostitution. It's the same thing, you know, I choose to be here, I like it, blah, blah, blah. But then going back in the story of many of these women, or most of these women, you see histories of sexual abuse, of, you know, different kinds of vulnerabilities, whether it's economic or, you know, just family, foster care, out on the street, just all these different kinds of dynamics that render a woman or child more vulnerable. And then that is exploited within the sex industry and then repackaged as empowering choice. But yeah, if you just peel back those layers a little bit, you see a completely different story. Definitely. Yeah. So going on to that scenario you were in, I guess there's different floors in the convention. And so you were in the BDSM area. You're seeing women being tied up, even wearing gas masks, right?
Yeah, I think you said that. The kink area, porn agency had women tied up in ropes, gagged, and others in gas masks, and they were being photographed. I mean, someone says, well, that's my kink. That's what turns me on. The picture of a woman being gagged, bound, wearing a gas mask, like the first thought that came to my mind was, this is like torture, like Nazi gas chambers. Mm-hmm. Like, that might be an offensive comparison to someone, but that was what came to my mind. Like, when I see gas masks, I think of people being tortured. That's the kind of cultural connotation. There were also sections that had live blow-up sex dolls that were really realistic. One girl, I literally was about to tap her on the shoulder, and then I suddenly realized she was plastic and that it was a wig and she was a sex doll. And that was quite disturbing, seeing a lot of guys around these dolls and just all the interest around sex dolls, because I just think, like, the levels of violence that is unleashed on sex dolls is really disturbing. Someone from the UK recently told me that there were blow-up sex doll brothels in Germany that they had to actually shut down because the dolls were being completely annihilated and destroyed through the violent sex acts. And I think that it's taking the dehumanization of women in the sex industry to the absolute extreme. And even just as a woman, I felt so insulted. Like, blow-up sex dolls, really? Like, the entire convention, it was such a interesting, like, mental gymnastics for me, because so many things I saw made me so mad, like, as a woman and as an activist in this space, as an abolitionist, like, being surrounded by the very things I hated. And I continually was just having to ask the Lord for grace and being like, you're here with us, Jesus. You see all this. You know all these women and all these men. Like, the men are ultimately captives of one thing. A lot of them are in deep addiction and are, like, I can't see a single person as a monster, because then I'm agreeing with that same spirit of dehumanizing anyone. Like, even the top porn producers that I'm seeing, I have to choose to come into agreement with God's heart for them and the possibility of redemption in their life. Like, even for me, to navigate the entire outreach experience, it was really important for me to connect with the humanization of every woman and every man, even if it was harder to love some than others.
Wow, that's a really good perspective. Knowing what some of these producers are producing would be definitely difficult to do that, but that's a, I mean, yeah, that's amazing to have that lens going into it and trying to humanize each person that you see, mm-hmm. whether they're the men lined up for the, to try out the whip or the girl yeah. being tied up.
And I actually had a cool moment with one guy who, the other girls were talking to someone and I just stepped to the side for a minute and this guy came up to me and started chatting to me. And he asked me if I was a performer. I said no. And then he, it was really interesting. He just looked at me and then kind of like paused and then was like, you kind of don't look like you belong here. Sorry if that's a weird thing to say, but what are you doing here? And I just thought, oh man, am I that obvious that I look that out of place? But so I told him about the hotline and he went quite, like his eyes went quite wide and he was like, oh wow, yeah, I guess that mm-hmm. that's important. And then I just felt like I wanted to ask him. So he mentioned that he had a daughter. I think I might have asked him if he had a daughter. He said that he had a young daughter. And I asked, like, how would you feel if your daughter was worked at a place like this, just out of interest? And straight off the bat, he was like, oh, I'd drag her straight out of here. If my daughter was here, are you kidding me? I wouldn't let my daughter be here. And I just thought, man, firstly, the hypocrisy of that statement, but again, showing compassion, wanting to really humanize this guy and kind of just almost help him make that connection. It's like he clearly saw his daughter as a totally different kind of girl and woman than these women he was absolutely fine to you know, dehumanize and see and value purely on their sexuality and outside appearance. And so I just said to him, you know, your daughter needs you to be a hero. She needs you to be the kind of guy that she can look up to and that you're a hero to her. And he like looked really taken aback, like, what? And I shook his hand. And as I did, I said to him, go be the hero that your daughter needs you to be. Go be the kind of man that she looks up to. And I can't remember what else I'd have said, but it was of that sentiment. And he like started blinking and was like, okay, thank you, I will. And it was like, I just felt at the end of that conversation, all I could do is help him make that connect. I mean, I didn't want to say, are you the kind of guy that you'd want your daughter to date? But it was implying that, like wanting to call him higher as a man and be like, be the kind of man that your daughter would respect and that is a hero, like calling out the inner hero in this guy, because I don't believe that his current behavior is the fullness of who he is created to be as a man. And I wanted to encourage him with that. So I'm sure he was not expecting the conversation to end that way, but it was really cool to have that moment.
That is really cool. And you've had, I mean, every time you go on an outreach, it seems like you come back with some really amazing stories. Do you have any other highlight moments from the convention that really stood out to you?
Yeah, I think there was a couple that stood out to me with the art that we gave was art on postcards. And I did art at university. And so some of the art was good and some of it was kind of cheesy. And I was a bit embarrassed, honestly, to give out some of these pieces of art. But the majority were awesome. Don't get me wrong. But the very first girl we gave this postcard out to, she looked so excited. She was like, you guys were here last year and you gave me a painting as well. And she took out her purse and she pulled the painting out of her purse and said, I still have it with me. I carried it with me wherever I go. No one's given me a painting before. It was such a special gesture to me. I carry it with me wherever I go.
Wow.
And from that moment on, I was like, well, I'm giving a piece of art to every single girl because it clearly is like conveying something of beauty and worth. And there's something about an original piece of artwork that you know. And so I would pray with every different piece of art I'd give out. I was like, maybe like this is a picture of a flower. Okay, Lord, let me give this to the girl that it's her favorite flower. And there was this one painting that had a panda on it with Chinese words, and we were like, it's a very random picture, that's going to be for a specific girl. And we saw, or I didn't personally, but the two of the other girls on the team saw a girl wearing a panda outfit, costume. So they went up to her. They were like, that's clearly the girl, and just shared it with her and was like, you know, this is for you. We've been asking God, who is the girl that's meant to get this? And it's you, and the Lord knows you. And they'd found out that the main word on that painting was the word love in Chinese. And they told her that. And she was like, well, my name is actually Amor, which means love. And her eyes were really wide. And she, like, they said she looked so shocked. And she was like, wow, like God, I feel like this was from God. And I just thought, how cool that, what a way, a visual way that she will clearly remember forever, that God knew her name, knows her name. He even knew what kind of outfit she would be wearing on that day and set that up to encounter her. And a few other women I spoke to, like as soon as I gave them the jewelry, their eyes filled with tears. And I remember a couple of girls being like, oh my gosh, why are we crying? They were like embarrassed with each other, like, what's wrong with us? Why are we crying? Why are we getting so emotional? And one just like got up from behind the booth, came around the table and was just like, hugged me and held me really tight and was like, thank you so much. Thank you. Like, this really means a lot. Like, I love what you guys are doing. Like, keep doing it. And so I feel like more than 90%, I mean, honestly, I can't think of an interaction I had with a woman that wasn't really positive. Like we were so well received because I think they picked up that we were genuinely there to support them, to be there for them, to encourage them. And I'm so happy about that. And it's not, you know, it's in the Lord's hands how he, you know, waters those seeds that were sown. And that's not my responsibility. That's his. And I followed up with a few of the girls that gave me their numbers. But I just, even walking around there, was praying like, Lord, let your river of living waters flow from this place. Like, so much brokenness is here. Like, bring your healing presence and love. And I think, as someone who is a prayerful person, I never underestimate the power of going to a place where the Lord isn't known, and us being temples of his very spirit. When we pray and when we worship him, even in the quiet place of our own spirit, that is a powerful act of intercession that has a ripple effect. And it may be invisible and it may require faith to believe that, but it's real. We were just there a couple of days, and it was a really, you know, long and intense days. And I'll just share the final story, that one of the women on our team, as I said, who is a survivor, she actually came out of the porn industry and had gone to those very porn conventions back in the day. And one morning all of us prayed for a handful of producers that she had specifically worked with. And I was so like inspired by the way that she was wanting to pray for these porn producers. I thought, this is a woman who is really walking in a lot of healing and restoration. Like, she is able to forgive them and wants them to know the freedom that she knows. And so on the very first day, she saw one of those guys, and he was so blown away that she had gone on to become this successful career woman, gotten out of porn. And he was like, we're doing these filmed interviews. It's being streamed around the world. Could I interview you? So the next thing she knows, she's being interviewed by a former porn producer all about her journey out of porn and why she's now coming back into the porn industry to give women a message of true hope and true empowerment. And like, he was really blown away and was like very respectful to her in this interview. And all the comments from like people watching in around the world, I guess people who wanted to be at the convention but couldn't go, with, you know, were streaming it, were like, whoa. Like, we read them later, and there was comment after comment saying, we really respect her. Like, she's clearly gone on to do some great things with her life. Like, not every woman who comes out of porn has it that good. Like, good for her. And for her, like, that was such a beautiful, redemptive full circle moment. And I just thought, God, you're so kind that you gave that to her as a way that right in the middle of this porn convention on a couch, she got to testify that she had gone free from porn and that she is now this whole different woman that's coming back with the message of hope for women still trapped inside the porn industry.
That's awesome. I love what you said about the interactions that you had were almost 100% positive. And I think that's a real testament to the way that you approach outreach and approach communicating. And women are smart. They're very intuitive, and they are very sensitive to tell, you know, what are the intentions of these people that are talking to me. And I think that's a real testament to just the spirit of love and compassion and empathy. And, you know, again, without that agenda, just to be there to love and support these women. Mm-hmm. It's really, really cool. I love that. I love hearing these stories. Sounds like it was a really impactful outreach, not only for those that you were able to interact with, but even for the team that did the outreach too.
For all of us.
So awesome.
Yeah, we were really, I want to say we were buzzing. It was still hard and challenging doing outreach in that environment. Probably for me, one of the most challenging environments I've done outreach in, just because of the level of intensity and the crowds. Many different dynamics. But I think, as you said, Lila, the most important thing is empathy. And in this entire industry that really lacks empathy, lacks really seeing women, that was my number one hope, that every woman that we talked to would feel seen by me and validated. Like, I don't care about your body. I'm not validating you or interested in talking to you because of anything that the way that all the other guys are evaluating you on. I want to just get to know the real you and encourage you. And my hope is often that Jesus' heart would just come through, because that's what they really need. Like, I think every person is aware of their own limitations of their love and compassion. But when you're tapping into God's deep, deep well of love and compassion for people, that is a whole different conversation. And so on outreaches, I always want to connect with that and be intentional about connecting with that. Empathizing and just being with the women wherever they are. Whatever place in the journey of exploitation, you know, some women it was their first year in the porn industry, their first convention. Some had been in it I spoke to one woman in her 60s who'd been in it for decades, and she gave me her signed book. And so that was a different conversation to the younger girls who were fresh in. But for every interaction, I just hope that they felt seen, known, and loved. And we're going to keep blowing the whistle on the porn industry. Like, I'm not afraid to call out exploitation that's taking place there. But we weren't going in there to do that, to go in as protesters or cause up an angry storm. We were there to love. And I think that we did that.
I think that's an important distinction that you just made, because, we are whistleblowing on the porn industry, and we are taking a strong stance against the industry. Mm-hmm. We are against the porn industry. We're not against the people that are in porn.
Exactly.
And I think that's an important distinction, because often, you know, in my own life, when I'm speaking against the porn industry and I'm speaking against the exploitation and the harmful effects that it has on consumers and those in it, it's many people say, kind of construe that wrong and say that I'm against the women in porn, or I hate them, or which is completely ridiculous, because so ridiculous. We have nothing but love, compassion, empathy for those who are in the industry.
Yeah.
And so I think that is really key, that you can be against porn but still love those who are in it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're aiming to do, because we definitely know that, you know, those who are in porn and prostitution, that doesn't define who they are. It's the exploitation is because it's an industry. It's an exploitation industry. It's the sex industry that is profiting off the sexual exploitation of all of these people. And it's not the people we're against at all, mm-hmm. that are in it, especially the women. We just want to be able to show love and compassion and be there for them. Mm-hmm. So, thank you, Helen, for the work that you do. I think it's critical to the work of Exodus Cry. We're all about, you know, trying to cover the bases where, yes, we're about abolition, but we're also recognizing that there's a lot of people who are in this industry, in the sex industry, that need love, need help, need somebody to be there for them as well. So, yeah, thank you, Helen. It was great to hear your stories and just to connect.
Yeah, great to share. And yeah, always a pleasure. I love what we do, and I love that, yeah, the different ways that we are taking on the porn industry this year, both you and I in different ways. Yeah. It's an exciting time.
All right. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. To learn more about how you can be involved, go to exoduscry.com and follow us on social media. If you have questions or comments, email us at feedback@exoduscry.com. We'd love to hear from you.